The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you. A little bit of a different spin this week. Last three episodes, we've looked at the Brewers teams from years past, the 2011 team, the 1981 team, the 1987 team. I thought there'd be some cool stories to share. Got a couple players on as well. Today I got a different special guest. His name is Jim Goulart. Good chance you haven't heard of him, but he's a guy who I've known for a couple decades. He follows Milwaukee Brewers minor league baseball about as closely as anybody I know. And he's not officially a reporter, but has done some things that certainly fall under that category. He's a guy who lives in Massachusetts. He has followed the team. He'll explain why. He'll explain his origin story, why it is that he likes the Brewers so much. And his days go back to a website called brewerfan.net, which might not sound like much if you haven't heard of it before, but it definitely was a great community for Milwaukee Brewers fans, particularly right at the turn of the century in 2000, 2001, 02, when the team was a little bit down on its luck. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. No Tom or Todd this week, so kind of an unusual episode. Jim Goulart, a guy that, he wasn't in an official capacity at brewerfan.net, but what he started doing was compiling daily link reports, basically just a summary of links on this message board system that sort of brought everybody up to date on what was going on in the minor leagues, whether the teams were winning, what the top prospects were doing. And in the late 90s, early 2000s, that was probably the best way to follow the Milwaukee Brewers. The teams were not very good at the major league level, and there were some hotshot prospects coming up through the ranks that I think everybody was more interested in, namely guys like Prince Fielder, Ricky Weeks, Corey Hart, J.J. Hardy, some guys who ultimately didn't pan out like Mike Jones, Dave Krinzel, who did make the big leagues for a little while. But these were the guys that we were paying attention to if you were following the Brewers. And Jim Goulart was a really prominent early contributor to that. The brewerfan.net community grew to be pretty big. I think it's probably declined a little bit in the Twitter age. A lot of what was going on there is similar to what you see on Twitter, just smart Brewers fans coming together, sharing some thoughts. And to this day, he's about as patched into the Brewers minor league system as anybody I know. He keeps very close contact with the individual teams. He's always posting information. You can follow him on Twitter and under the username Mass Haas. He's a Moose Haas fan, so given that he's from Massachusetts, this is an extremely clever name. I believe it's Mass_Haas. And wanted to talk to him about the current Brewers minor league situation. That's been a hot topic of late because the Brewers system has been ranked near the bottom or at the bottom by most publications that look at ranking the minor league systems across baseball. And it's been talked about why that is for the Brewers, namely because great players like Keston Hiura rushed through the system and are helping the big league team. Others were part of the Christian Yelich trade and other trades that they've made to help the big league club. They have been able to sort of find ways to improve the big league club without the services of top flight, you know, rookies or guys, prospects coming in as fringe roster guys even from the minor league system. However, they've used their minor league system very liberally, the Brewers have. They've had, really, in the last couple years when they've gone to the playoffs, they haven't had just 25 guys that they've relied on. It hasn't been just 30 guys either. It's been a pretty large pool of players. Brandon Woodruff, I think, is a good example from a couple years ago, went back and forth to the minor leagues a lot, even though he had proven he was big league caliber pitching, and they had a lot of guys like that. They were able to keep their roster fresh. They were able to get input from a lot of guys. It served them in September when they could expand their rosters. And of course, the last two Septembers have both been incredible seasons, both in 2018 and 2019, incredible toppers to the season that enabled the team to win the division in one case and get into the playoffs in another. So this year with the roster situation, if baseball plays out like it was supposed to, it would be different. There would only be, I believe, 28 men on a roster in September. So the Brewers wouldn't have quite that option anymore. And so the spotlight is on the minor leagues. Like, are they good enough? Even though they've lost some of these players by understandable means, is this franchise set up to fail down the road because their minor league system is ranked so low? And I thought that'd be a good question to pose to Jim. He's following it as close as anybody, and he can sort of explain exactly what that means to be ranked near the bottom, if it really has any tangible impact on what to expect out of the Brewers' major league team in 2020, 2021, 2022, whatever the next few years. and maybe some guys that that he's keeping an eye on that we should know about that may not be maybe a guy that shows up on a top 10 prospect list. Also talk to him about the way the Brewers conduct business in Latin America and how that's changed and how that piece of the puzzle is critical to what the Brewers are doing across their minor league system. So thought you might appreciate this. Again, his name is Jim Goulart. I hope you enjoy my conversation with him. My guest is Jim Goulart. That's a guy you might know if you follow minor league baseball around the Milwaukee Brewers organization. I've been aware of him for, kind of crazy to think, but almost 20 years at this point. I first interacted with him on the BrewerFan.net message boards long ago. He's about as patched into what's going on in Brewers minor league baseball as anybody. And you'll hear him on radio interviews here and there. I know he's been on WTMJ with Matt Pauly a few times and thought we'd bring him in to talk some Brewers minor league baseball. Jim lives in Massachusetts, but a huge Brewers fan and follower. And so we'll start, Jim. How are things in Massachusetts? I imagine it's similar to how it is in Wisconsin, where there just aren't that many people out and about. I know you live fairly south of Boston, correct?
Yeah, I'm about 50 miles south of Boston, not quite near the, I guess closest to the, what we might call the gateway to Cape Cod. I'm not a Cape Codder, but that's that general position if you're looking at a map of Massachusetts. So about an hour from Fenway, and actually it's a nice part of the country in terms of day trips and such. I'm close to places like Plymouth and Mystic, Connecticut. New Hampshire and Vermont aren't too far away. Western Mass is beautiful. So we've always considered ourselves pretty lucky to be here.
So first of all, curiosity about your origin story, how it is that somebody who, my understanding, has lived in Massachusetts kind of your whole life or most of your life came to be such a big Brewers fan.
Born and raised here. And first of all, let me just say a couple of disclaimers here. You were asking about what the state is of Massachusetts and stuff. And although we're going to have some fun reminiscing with some old Brewer fan stories and even my own little backstory, keep in mind that I think both of us obviously have everybody's best thoughts in mind with what's going on in the world right now. And here in Massachusetts, it's been a very gloomy couple of days. And just the fact that we're not even able to go out and get much of a respite from the weather with a nice little walk in the neighborhood or something is kind of accentuating things right now. But so just that little disclaimer out front. But yeah, as far as my origins go, I was 10 years old when I became a Brewer fan, and the roundabout way was my dad was a big hockey and football guy, brought me to my first Patriots game when he woke me up one morning and just said, hey, we're on our way. But baseball, I was kind of left to my own learning about the game, experiencing it, and for some reason, I never really grabbed on to the Red Sox very early on. And I've shared the story with Matt Pauly, as you mentioned. But real quick, I just took a walk to our local, they called it variety stores back then, where you would pick up your baseball card packs with the unchewable bubble gum. But they also had a pack of stickers that was available. And I just kind of bought it, and it could have been JR, it could have been any random team at that point. Now, keep in mind, this was 1973, so the Brewers had only been, this was their third year of existence in Milwaukee. And wouldn't you know it, the pack was just nothing but Brewers stickers. I went home, made myself a T-shirt, and said, okay, I'm going to put this T-shirt on. That might have been the end of it, except that my brothers and I went down to the street corner that day, set up a Kool-Aid stand is what you'd call it at that point. And it was more than that in terms of a local news photographer drove by and said, well, it's a hot summer day. Let me take a picture. And he couldn't get all three or four of us in the shot. He asked for a lucky number. I picked it. And I actually, maybe I'll tweet it out after this thing gets posted, but online. But I had posted it a while back where the actual photo that was on the front page of the newspaper with me and my homemade Brewers T-shirt, which was probably about 3 days old at that point. The sports editor followed up with a little letter in the email with the glossy that I still have, asking what the nature of the Brewers shirt was. But something about that photo and the editor's comment convinced me to just grab onto the team at that point.
And then what is it about minor league baseball that you're into?
Sure. So I became a Brewer fan at that point. And now keep in mind, it's my teenage years. The only thing I really could grab onto as this fandom kind of developed back then was the Sporting News, which I must have subscribed to as maybe a 13 or 14 year old. And lo and behold, you got every box score in the paper when it arrived on a weekly basis. And keep in mind also, the Brewers were an American League East team at that point. And that meant that they were on TV when they played the Red Sox. And also what happened is there was a local Providence station. I'm actually closer to Providence than I am Boston. And the Providence station, I think they might still do so to this day, covered all the Yankee games on local radio. So I was exposed to enough Brewer games so that it wasn't just a distant, you know, situation, obviously way pre-internet at this point. And it was that way that I could just keep that passion going all through those years into my 20s. And then finally, we had a situation where, okay, there's this thing called the internet, and I can find places to talk Brewers with other fans. And we had a situation where the ESPN, you'd call them forums, I guess, at that point, even the whatever the MLB tried to organize, we're talking in the late 90s and such, they were just pretty horrific, to be honest with you. Trollers, fans from other sites, some folks kind of said, well, enough of this, we're going to put together something called brewerfan.net. Like, oh, wow, yeah, the minor leagues prior to, let's say, 2001 for me, they were just footnotes that you might see in occasional glimpses of somebody like myself who was out of state. Just had no idea until players actually made it up to the big leagues or you read spring training accounts somehow. Now, all of a sudden, there's a player, this guy named Toby Harmon, would put together a list of the 50 top prospects that really update almost on a weekly basis. And I just kind of got immersed in that and said, well, this is a great thing. And then beyond that, I kind of just took the lead and said, well, we need a way to kind of on a daily basis let our fans who had found Brewer Fan at that point, what went on a daily basis in the minor leagues. And I crafted something, and I have no idea where I came up with it, dubbed it the Link Report. I think it's been the Link Report since day one. And at that point, it wasn't a whole lot more than just a collection of copy and pasting box scores that I could loosely find and put into a thread. But at least it was something where in one place we knew what was going on throughout the entire system. And I can expand on how that evolved over the years, because it's allowed me to make a lot of connections within the Brewers organization that have just, you know, as a taken me through my 30s and 40s to a point that I can really appreciate what Brewer Fan allowed me to do. And folks like Brian Kapelusch, who is the owner and founder, so to speak. I owe him a lot of gratitude for the joy and fun that he's put into my life, really, for the past 20 years plus.
Yeah, brewerfan.net, I don't know if sort of the current generation of people growing up can appreciate how passionate of a community that was. I certainly was a part of it in the early 2000s and 01, 02, 03. Those Brewers teams aren't any good, you know, like they are struggling. And the only way you can really sort of feed your fandom is pay attention to what's coming up from underneath. And this is the era where they draft, you know, they draft Prince Fielder in 02, Ricky Weeks in 03, Ryan Braun in 05. This is where you start to follow those guys, thinking that's the next wave of success. And that's how it worked out. Those Brewers teams became great. So that's probably the point where I fall off a little bit from following the minor leagues. And in, you know, certainly by 2011, where the team was good enough, I just wasn't looking at box scores from rookie ball low A anymore. And I imagine a lot of people were the same way. What was it that kept you there? Because you've stayed, you know, you continue to do the Link Report and follow up with what's going on in the minor league games. Why? What was it that kind of kept your passion burning for the minor leagues?
I love the fact that you mentioned those early years. And throughout my fandom, I would always try to grab on to anything that had a New England or Massachusetts in particular connection, right? It was just, some of the examples that I have is in the early part of the 2000s, the Brewers AAA affiliate was in Indianapolis. Well, Indianapolis came to Pawtucket, Rhode Island when they faced the Red Sox affiliate. So I'd always made sure that I went down there and actually was able to conduct some interviews for Brewer Fan, bring my family down to enjoy some of that experience as well. And then, again, looking for the Massachusetts connections, one of the first interviews that I conducted was for a lanky left-hander. His name was Justin Gordon, who was literally from like the town next door. He never really advanced past high A, but I was able to put together a fairly lengthy Q&A with him for the site that gave me glimpses into the lives that these guys live. Well, lo and behold, all of a sudden, right about the time that Brewer Fan was coming about, you know how the Brewers named their minor league and position player and pitcher of the year every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that only came about officially, at least according to the media guide, in 1999. And the first pitcher of the organizational year that year was a guy named Alan LaRault, who would later on make his major league debut for the Brewers. And again, he was literally in a town that's like, you know, 5 miles from my own. And wow, I really now had that local connection. And I got to admit that I probably posted and obsessed more about this young man than I really should have. You know, he could have been nailed for 6 runs in 5 innings, but somehow I put a positive spin on his efforts in 2001. But, you know, when I think back how much I've grown with the website, back then, even as I was in my 30s then, and even then, I did happen to meet Alan and on, you know, more than one occasion and get a chance to converse with him. He wasn't technically in terms of was it online, digital, that kind of thing. It was always just in-person meetings. And I would run and share way more than I should have on the forums at that point. And I look back now and just kind of cringe. I've learned so much since then to respect the things that I pick up and learn as I try to find little Brewer tidbits here and there. And I always think back to what I might have done differently with Alan. So if he's listening, sorry if I probably overshared at that time. But he was my connection that helped just burst the Brewer Fan continuum, I guess, if you might call it that. Then there was a gentleman who, Tommy Tanis, was a Northeast scout at that time, excuse me. And that got me fascinated, and I maintain it to this day, so much of a respect for the Brewers scouting department, both on the amateur and professional level, particularly the amateur level perhaps, because I was able to learn a lot about how that all came about. He, again, was based in a local town here. And he is now he's a vice president of scouting for domestic and international for the Mets. So he's maintained a great career right through that 20-year-ago period. The big thing that put us over the top at Brewer Fan back in those years that you describe, when we were just getting on the cusp of seeing some of these young names, Bill Hall was actually the first, before J.J. Hardy even, to kind of break through as guys that we had watched in the minor league box scores, followed shortly by J.J. Hardy. But the one guy who really we all owe a lot to is Jim Powell, because in the midst of that 102-loss season in 2002, it was always a highlight of his broadcast to shout out to us, maybe even to myself individually once in a while, but really just to focus and really impart on the airwaves at that point what was happening in the minor league system. And a lot of it was based on our reports, which was just the coolest thing. I really owe Jim to this day. I still keep in touch with him a little bit. And of course, the success that he's had ever since. But Jim was the one that really, really put us over the top, as you might remember.
Yeah, Jim Powell is still, of course, doing radio for the Atlanta Braves. Has been doing it ever since he left. And every time I catch a little clip of those of Braves highlights, sometimes they'll play the radio broadcast. If you see if it's a big highlight, you hear that voice, and definitely a throwback to my childhood. I do want to ask about this Brewers organization. The minor league system is not regarded warmly across baseball. You see them ranked. If somebody does farm system rankings, and those are very popular this time of year, well, I guess previous to this time of year, since this should be the baseball season at this point, but they were at the bottom, near the bottom. And I kind of was curious, just from an, you know, sort of an independent point of view, what that means to you. Because we get a lot of qualifiers like, well, it's because Keston Hira and other players are serving the major league team, so they're not in the minor league rankings, or they've made some trades that helped the team but gutted their minor league system to a degree. And I can understand that. I guess it also still is a fair way to say they don't have a lot coming up. They don't have a lot waiting in the wings, which I think is significant when you're talking about trades in the future, when you're talking about guys on the fringes of the roster who can help them in the big league season. But when you see those rankings, what does that mean to you, and what sort of caveats, I guess, do you apply to that when you hear somebody bring up that, oh, the Brewers are last in minor league system?
I agree that the system is not strong at this time. Let's put a caveat right there. I think I saw one particular ranking, I forget offhand, it might have been Pipeline, but somebody had both, they broke it down by pitching and by the position player, and they had both at 30th, which I thought was a bit silly, because I do think there is some significant pitching that would at least qualify as middle of the pack. But overall, it isn't strong at this point. But we also know that things can happen quickly. The Keston Hira, you hit right with your first round pick, and that player can be up within a year and a half to 2 years. The upper levels right now, particularly on the position player side, it's really tough, JR, to take somebody and just carry them through all the way as a position player. Pitchers are a little different. You can be that Quentin Torres Costa, who was a 35th round pick, right? And despite his Tommy John surgery, you know, a couple of years ago, in 2018, he was being bandied about as somebody who could be a 40-man roster add, right? But, you know, he wasn't, got hurt shortly thereafter. There is talent that's not too far away on the pitching side, because with pitchers, you can develop that one pitch, you can have that velocity and then build off of that. It's just so hard to take position players and jump from, you know, that gradual climb. It's just really, really tough to do. And we haven't seen a lot of that since that great stretch in the early to mid 2000s, in which that young core, that Jack Cerenzik group, he just kept hitting and hitting. And maybe it's tougher now than it was then, but boy, I think it just goes to show you what a great job that really was with those picks. It is lean right now, though, JR.
When you look at that, do you think that inhibits the 2020 or the 2021 Brewers from performing well on the field? Or do you think, you know, they have enough, it's not so much about the top flight prospects to get through the current major league season, that they've got enough there and that they can address the long-term picture down the road? Or do you think this is going to be a pretty big disadvantage if and when we get baseball in 2020, that they don't have any guys that they can, you know, sort of promote in the spots that they might need them as the season goes on?
Right, right. I hear what you're saying. There's guys like Drew Rasmussen, who's, you know, former number one pick. Brewers get him after a couple of Tommy John surgeries in the sixth round. That can be an impact arm, and that is where there's going to be potential . 2018, when David Stearns made a lot of sensational mid-year acquisitions to really fortify that whole stretch run to that fantastic, you know, 97 win team, game 163 and all that. He was able to trade away prospects that maybe hadn't shined. And I think they were able to spin prospects that they kind of knew weren't going to max out, but other teams were still willing to take a chance on Cody Medeiros and Demi Ormoloy and others that, you know, had performed perhaps on the numerical side of things. Some unknowns that maybe had some proper numbers that allowed them to acquire enough to fortify a stretch. I have faith that they can do that again. I have faith that they'll find enough lower to mid-level guys that they can establish and say, we can fortify our team through trade. It's just so hard to say in this environment today, where what does a trade deadline constitute if it's going to be a, at best, a 60 game season or an 80 game season. You know, it really will be the few pitchers that might be able to help rotate through that 40 man roster. Long term, 2022, 2023, we need to see some infusion of talent.
In a way, I feel kind of bad for a guy like Bryce Terang or even Ethan Small to be at the top of the heap when the system is overall regarded as not as strong. Those guys, I feel like there's a greater spotlight on those guys who might be perfectly fine prospects, but they're not, you know, they're not top 50 guys, maybe not top 100 guys. I know Bryce Terang is a top 100 guy in a few lists, but there's more expected out of them because those guys are sort of the next shining star, the next Keston Hira, even if they're, you know, too young or too unproven or just not there skill-wise yet to sort of, you know, carry that burden. What do you see or what do you hear about Bryce Terang and Ethan Small? Do you still imagine someday those guys are going to be big-time contributors? I know Ethan Small hasn't been here that long, but what do you see?
Yeah, again, I think Terang needs to show that he's going to expand his game with age, with experience in terms of really just his gap power and stuff. He doesn't have to hit double-digit home runs to be really effective. When you play the type of defense he can at short, when you show the plate awareness that he does in terms of bases on balls, and when you have the speed that he does, there's a lot there to like. So, you know, you mentioned that there's a lot of pressure on them. If you ask them, I don't think they mind being number one, number two, number three. Ethan Small, Aaron Ashby, another lefty, they don't mind at all. They're going to live up to their potential. It's just that they're not even quite established at Double A yet, you know? So they're not 2020 help. They're probably not 2021 help. They are strong, contributing possibilities for the year after that and beyond. It's tough to get. You can't get spoiled by the Keston Hiras of the world. That doesn't happen very often. And I just think that both Small, Ashby, others who rate highly in that top group, particularly from the pitching side, will be eventual contributors. They'll get their chances. I want to remind you that Brandon Woodruff, okay, and we'll know this from our link report, in 2016, the God bless him, the now defunct Brevard County Manatees went 40-97. Okay, 40-9, that's hard to do. 40-97. And there was a young man who made 8 starts for that team with a 1.83 ERA. That was for a 40-97 team, and his name was Brandon Woodruff. So despite overall perception, you're going to have development success stories even in the bleakest of times. I know I keep harping on it in this conversation, and I do think those success stories are easier to manifest themselves on the mound side. And I think that's one of the reasons why, and we can morph into this conversation if you'd like, but we can just mention briefly that when you see those large bonus baby dollars paid out by the Brewers to their Dominican and Venezuelan, their international prospects, those larger bonuses tend to go to position players. I think they know that they can go for volume with pitching in the international side, but when they have to reach out, despite the, you know, the Gilbert Lara $3 million fiasco, sorry, Doug Melvin, but it just didn't work out. The Brewers have focused year after year, those larger bonus dollars going towards position players, particularly from Venezuela, where they've really taken a much higher percentage of players in recent years than other organizations who are maybe scared off by the political climate there. The Brewers still have many feet on the ground, so to speak, from a scouting perspective there. That being said, JR, you know, we can see some great statistical lines out of the Dominican Summer League and even in Maryvale for these guys, but really outside of Orlando Arcia, who is another story in and of itself from the big league perspective, but still was a success story in terms of development, there really isn't anybody on the cusp of that chain, you know, that is really pushing to double A or particularly not triple A, where you say, okay, yeah, the Brewers signed this guy for $800,000 out of Venezuela or $1.1 million out of the Dominican. We're still waiting for that person to go level by level, success by success. And even though there's some really, that's what the top 30 lists right now for the Brewers, it's scattered with players that are recent signees that the scouts love, but they're 17 and 18 years old. And you can't pin certainly 2021 or 2022 hopes even on that as well. So the future of the Brewers farm system is going to lie in a big, big way as to how those young men develop from the Dominican, from Venezuela. They've got a young man from Mexico, Victor Castaneda, who performed really well in the AFL this year, but he's maxed out so far with the Timber Rattlers, you know? So I can mention more, but those are some of the names that and places where the Brewers are in their player development system. And I think they get penalized the most in their rankings because they just haven't taken some of these young guys yet, and brought them to where they need to be. So it's tempting to say they're close. They're not.
Yeah, Gilbert Lara is the name that makes me very sort of emotionally gun-shy anytime we start talking about these top prospects that they get out of Latin American countries. And I mean, you hit it on the head. They're young. They're super young, 16, 17, 18 years old. You know, you don't know how they're going to acclimate to stateside baseball as a player, as a person. There's so many variables. And as you saw with Lara, sometimes you pay that much money up front and it doesn't work out. And there aren't many success stories you can really lean on. You look at these rankings of prospects, a lot of guys who's, you know, Eduardo Garcia, Hedbert Perez or Hedbert Perez, Luis Medina, Jesus Parra. You know, to me, those names just kind of, I just don't take them into account yet because they're so young, because we haven't seen them at such a high level. Do you get the sense that the Brewers, I like how you point out the pitching, this difference between position players and pitching, because we've seen a lot of college guys get drafted in recent years by the Brewers on the pitching side, a lot of left-handers, a lot of the guys that you just can't find, you know, lefty being the more novel, you know, the greater novelty, I guess. Do you get the sense that the Brewers are more aggressive than other teams in Latin American countries, that there is a certain amount of long game that we just haven't yet realized because the Brewers haven't been doing it this way for very long? Or do most teams operate this way and it's just that the Brewers are kind of banking on those guys actually developing, that they just don't have guys in their stateside system yet that you know, that really fill out these top prospect lists?
Yeah, it's really been a nice feature of the David Stearns perspective on things that there is such a focus on this now, because let's not forget the Brewers had a miserable reputation in terms of their Dominican presence. Their academy was in shambles. It was upgraded within the past decade. Now it's being completely rebuilt, which is kudos to the organization for that. There was a time when there was no Dominican summer league presence at all by the Brewers, and they had their Dominican farmhands brought directly to Maryvale, which stunted whatever potential development we might have seen there. So, yeah, I do think they're being aggressive. I think they're really smart in taking advantage of the Venezuelan connection that they have. Baseball America, it's such an odd system. I mean, we hear now about 15-year-olds that are already committed to sign when next July, meaning July 2021's deadline comes around, that are committed to teams, including the Brewers. And we're like, okay, you know, but again, we see the signing bonuses. Each team has their international pool that they can work with. And the Brewers certainly do maximize theirs and take advantage of whatever they can do. And they do sign, seemingly, you know, we've seen it year in and year out. We track it on our draft forum at Brewer Fan. And of course, Baseball America and other sites do it more thoroughly now than we do, but we keep track of those bonuses. And as somebody finally does get to Wisconsin, or, you know, eventually, hopefully we'll see them in places like Carolina and Biloxi, we'll hearken back to, yeah, he signed for $1.2 million and look where he is now. But at this point, we just have to wait for the process to happen. And it's great that those ranking systems think highly of some of those kids, but not enough to boost the overall aspect of where the Brewer system is right now.
Well, before I let you go, I have to get some of your some impressions or some sleepers you maybe are keeping an eye on in the system. You'd mentioned Drew Rasmussen early on, and I've talked about him with Tom Hodricourt. I think we're going to see Drew Rasmussen pretty soon. I don't think he's a secret anymore, and he's 24 years old. He's certainly old enough to be on a big league roster, and like you said, two Tommy John surgeries. I think he's that sort of 2018 Corbin Burns potential there as a guy who sort of comes out of nowhere to be a big contributor. My eye is always is right now, because the system doesn't have a lot of those guys, on maybe some bounce back candidates. That there are guys like, I don't know, maybe Corey Ray. I don't even want to say Trey Supach would be a bounce back, because he's been fine. But guys who maybe had higher prospect shine at one point, you know, maybe Joe Gray, maybe Zach Brown. I keep hoping Lucas Ersig is gonna sort of find something in the minor leagues. So those are the guys that I kind of keep an eye on, thinking maybe somebody sort of catches fire. What a couple names maybe, or a couple guys that you're really intrigued by, again, if and when we get baseball going this year, that you're going to be keeping an eye on.
Sure. I think in prior, whether it was Twitter conversations or whatever, we've always, you and I, shared an appreciation for a guy like Brent Suter, you know, with his draft status and everything else, and what we're seeing happen, even without the effects of the horrible virus on the current 2020 amateur draft, just an appreciation for how hard these young men work, and that sometimes nuggets can be found. I really like a young man. His name's Luke Barker. He made his debut at 25 in affiliated ball. Okay, so he was an independent league signing. He was a senior out of Chico State, I believe, in California. So he got off to a late start in terms of pro ball, and when that debut did happen, it was indie ball. Now the Brewers signed him, and I think some people were surprised he wasn't even eligible to be like picked in Rule 5 last fall. In other words, the Brewers didn't have to add him to the 40-man. They'll have to make that choice on him this fall. But if he had been eligible, I guarantee you that would be one arm that the Brewers would have made sure they protected on the 40-man. They didn't have to, but so now he's already age 28. But when it comes to power relievers, you don't have to bank on that 10-year career from an organizational perspective. You just want that impact when it's needed, particularly maybe as a late season, postseason kind of arm add. So he'd be one guy I would definitely keep an eye on. I'm just going to focus on some of the guys who kind of went under the radar initially with their draft status and stuff, but Dylan File, 21st round pick, is a guy that might not have been drafted, a right-handed pitcher who shined in Carolina and then Biloxi this past summer, 1.13 whip. I jotted that down before we chatted here. He doesn't turn 24 until June, and he's got a chance to really shine. 22 walks in 146 innings last year. So that's another name. Let's find somebody on the position player side who can be that sleeper kind of guy. I think Cooper Hummel is a name that we should get to know. He's a switch hitting outfielder, converted catcher, who played a full year at Biloxi last year, should see AAA this year. Combination of power and plate discipline, and just not a center fielder, but somebody that could be a name that would be at least, it's nice to see a homegrown, developed young man who went through those stages, went through the levels. Now all of a sudden he's on the big league club at some point, even if it's as a fourth or fifth outfielder, but always nice to see, because he was an 18th round pick out of, you know, University of Portland. So those are the types of just a few names that we can kind of keep an eye on going forward. I also, finally, I guess from that perspective, Noah Zavalas was the player that came over with Matt Gamble in the Domingo Santana trade with Seattle.
Yeah, with Ben Gamel, yeah.
Ben Gamel, yeah. I'm sorry, I said Matt, right? Okay,
my
early Brewer fan days. But
I was calling Zach Davies. This guy didn't even play for the Brewers. I was calling Zach Davies Kyle Davies until they traded him. Very, very strange. But anyway,
I absolutely have apologized for tweeting Kyle Davies' name in the past 5 years or so. But yeah. And he had a fantastic year at Carolina. What's really tricky about some of the Brewers' best mid-range pitching prospects in that regard is they're not necessarily all fireballers, okay? There's a young man named Max Lazar down in Wisconsin who just dazzled. It's like 20 years old, you know, this past summer. So, but some of their best statistical lines are being put up by guys who know how to pitch. And you know something? I enjoy watching guys who know how to pitch. So, you know, I'll mix in those guys with the 98-mile-an-hour Woodruffs and Rasmussens and those guys. But there's a place in the game for them, at least I hope there always is, so that these guys can get rewarded with MLB careers. Those would be some of the under-the-radar names. But, again, there's a reason that David Stearns went out and made so many moves on the MLB side this year, because he wasn't going to plug those gaps necessarily with talent that's been rising to the top over the last few years, because it's still just a little bit too far away to intimate that.
Real quickly, the catching position is one that seems like the Brewers will be looking to address, and that does seem like a position where they have some strength. Guys like Mario Feliciano, Peyton Henry come to mind. What do you hear and know about them? How optimistic should Brewers fans be about those two guys and about all the catchers in the system?
Sure. Feliciano and Henry have been, they certainly, at least for the past year and a half or so, have been kind of, especially when both healthy, which Feliciano had a nice healthy year last year, MVP in the Carolina League, a little bit joined at the hip, which I think has helped establish and firm up their development, saves wear and tear, yet they still see enough action behind the plate so they're not missing out. I think Feliciano would have begun this year in a normal development year at Biloxi. They might have finally broken up the tandem and kept Henry for another year to season at Carolina, not sure, but he's a defensive whiz. Great makeup young man from all accounts. The Brewers can feel very strong in that regard with those two at the top. Jacob Nottingham, they can't option him next year, so this will be an interesting situation to see what happens there. Can they maybe pry some value of him in trade at some point? That's something we can always keep in mind. It's never a problem to overdevelop at a certain position because there is value, and particularly behind the plate. Nottingham's already been traded twice, as we know, and Brewers picked him up as part of his second career trade, and we'll see what happens there. I feel bad for like a guy like David Freitas, who had 381 last year, won the batting title at AAA, and somehow at age, I believe, 31, you know, still has these horrid minor league options left, and was able to be optioned down again, this spring just to be, you know, I don't want to say backup fodder at San Antonio, but I know he didn't show well in September down the stretch last year in those pinch hitting appearances, but he's a guy that it would be nice to see some type of an additional chance there. I root for those grinders, as they're just easy to root for.
Jim Goulart, a grinder in his own right, as I mentioned, a long time follower of Milwaukee Brewers minor league baseball, Milwaukee Brewers in general, but particularly the minor leagues. If you want to find him, you got to find his Twitter handle, one of the best in Brewers Twitter land, given his Massachusetts roots. It's at @Mass_Haas. That's Haas, of course, a nod to the 1980s era pitcher Moose Haas with the Milwaukee Brewers.
Can I share one quick Moose Haas story for you real quick?
Do it. You betcha. Let's do it.
Okay. I had to look this up on Retro Sheet just before I spoke with you, just to confirm some of the details, but I was 15 years old. It was 1978, And that was such a breakout year for the Brewers, right? But it was early in that year, 1978, April 12th, it looks like it was. And I don't know why I was home from school that day. It was a Wednesday. It was a day game, played in the wonderful 2 hours and 18 minutes. But remember I talked earlier about the Providence station carrying the Yankee games. So the Yankees were in Milwaukee that day. Again, going by the box score here in front of a packed house of 8,000 fans at County Stadium. But Moose Haas struck out 14 Yankees, and I was mesmerized to my transistor radio. It's one of my very clear early Brewer fandom moments. And then I found out, and by the way, that record stood until Ben Sheets struck out the 18 Braves, like 26 years later or whatever it was. But 14 Ks on that day, complete game. And his prior game was also a complete game, but it was a 16-3 win. And it just goes to show how much the game has changed, JR. I mean, how many pitchers stay in for complete games when their teams are up 16-3 these days, right? And the 14K game was played in 2 hours and 18 minutes. And it's just incredible when you look back at that. And then finally, I'm not a big guy at all. And Moose Haas, when I realized, despite his nickname, was only 6'1", 180. And only through researching did I find out that his father nicknamed him Moose because he at birth. But he wasn't even that big a child. He was like 7 pounds, so many ounces. And yet Moose stuck throughout all these days. If I ever get a chance to talk to Moose Haas, that would be a nice highlight because he was my favorite Brewer during those heydays of that year. And I was glad to pay homage to him with the little Twitter handle and Brewer fan handle.
So Mass_Haas is where you'll find him. Jim Goulart, thanks for joining me, sir. I really appreciated this deep dive into the Brewers minor leagues. Take care. Stay safe as always. You know, stay safe. The new goodbye that we say to just about everybody this day and age. But thanks again. And hopefully we catch up sometime in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks, JR.
That's what we have on this week's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Not sure if we'll have an episode next week. Sort of remains to be seen. Some scheduling things and just trying to figure out, I guess, what topics to talk about. We've touched on a few great Brewers seasons. Certainly we could spend some time talking about the 2008 season. Sneaky good season would be 1978 or 1992. The 1982 season, of course, is the obvious one, although a lot of people have talked about the World Series qualifying Milwaukee Brewers from 1982. Probably not as excited to revisit that unless I can get a really cool guest for you. So we'll see what I can drum up here. But we'll be coming at you here in a couple weeks. You can always get the latest episode right on your phone if you subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Those are the best places to find us. And we'll see what we got for you. Again, we're just soldiering through like everybody else, kind of making it up as we go along. Hopefully you enjoy this this coverage, the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast, and we will chat with you again soon. You can find me on Twitter. If you want to add some feedback, I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. Appreciate it. We will chat with you again very soon.